3, 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Welcome to another exciting episode of NIDS Knowledge, a weekly show of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies, where we are advancing peace, promoting stability, and helping you to think deterrence. Each week, we inform you about a deterrence topic and its value in preserving peace. We hope you enjoy this show.
Hi, my name is Bob Peters, and this is NIDS Knowledge. Today, we're going to be talking about the new American nuclear consensus. So, what do I mean when I say the new American nuclear consensus? Well, let's start with some history. At the end of the Cold War, there was a bipartisan consensus amongst both Republicans and Democrats that given the end of the Soviet Union, the United States could afford to reduce its nuclear arsenal. And so from President Reagan to President George H.W. Bush to President Clinton to President George W. Bush, both sides were slowly drawing down the nuclear arsenal within the United States and Russia. And in 2010, something called the New START Treaty was signed, and that brought both the United States and Russia down to about 1,500 strategic nuclear warheads. At the same time, President Obama started retiring additional non-strategic nuclear weapons, such as the submarine-launched nuclear Tomahawk cruise missile. President Obama signed the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, ostensibly to prevent Iran from becoming a nuclear power. And so everyone was kind of on board with this. But by the late 2010s and early 2020s, you started to see things start to change within three groups. So what are these three groups? The first was what I call the nuclear realists, and the nuclear realists sought a larger and more diversified nuclear arsenal to tailor deterrence against growing threats from Russia and increasingly China. Then there's the nuclear arms controllers, and they emphasize arms control measures, particularly legally binding treaties, as a means to strengthen strategic stability and dissuade Russia and China from pursuing additional nuclear buildups. Now, the nuclear arms controllers did not necessarily oppose U.S. nuclear modernization, which the nuclear realists very much wanted, but they were skeptical of any increase in numbers. And finally, there's the nuclear disarmament crowd, which sought to rid the world of nuclear weapons and wanted the United States to lead by example by cutting the size of the American arsenal. And the nuclear disarmers in the 2009, 2010, to 2012 period, this was really kind of their heyday. President Obama advocated for a world without nuclear weapons, and things seemed to be going in their favor. However, as noted, by the late 2010s, things began to change. Citing years of violations of the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, or the INF Treaty, by Russia, which had been developing and fielding nuclear-capable intermediate-range missiles, the Trump administration withdrew from that treaty in 2018, to the quiet applause of many arms controllers. But still, divisions remained within the nuclear policy community. President Trump started a new non-strategic nuclear program called the SLIC Amend. It was a sea-launched cruise missile nuclear. And President Biden tried to kill that program and also sought additional nuclear arms control treaties with both Russia and China. But a funny thing happened in 2023. By a bipartisan vote, Congress, including a great many Democrats, reinstated the new Trump-era SLICM-N, the sea-launched cruise missile nuclear, to the defense budget. And while nuclear disarmers condemned the program, many arms controllers quietly applauded or acquiesced the continuation of this nuclear cruise missile. And it was becoming clear by the fall of 2023, by October, that something extraordinary happened. There was a new mainstream consensus within the American policy community. So what happened between the election of President Biden and the fall of 2023? Well, fundamentally, the world became much less stable and much more dangerous. We all know that Russia, of course, invaded Ukraine for a second time in February 2022. And then Vladimir Putin almost immediately started issuing nuclear threats against Ukraine, the United States, and much of NATO, to include Poland, Denmark, and Norway. Russia suspended the New START Treaty, which capped the number of strategic nuclear weapons in both the United States and Russia. Moscow de-ratified the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, which is that international treaty that prohibits states from engaging in nuclear weapons testing. And these actions were coupled with other things, such as Russia's movement of theater nuclear weapons into Belarus, which reminded many in the United States that Russia had 2,000 more non-strategic nuclear weapons. They used to be called tactical nuclear weapons, but they're called non-strategic nuclear weapons. They had 2,000 non-strategic nuclear weapons that were not treaty-bound, while the United States only had about a couple hundred of these non-strategic nuclear weapons. And it became clear that Putin might make good on his numerous threats to use nuclear weapons during the Ukraine conflict. And then, at the same time, another thing happened in the early Biden administration when it became evident that China was building missile silos in its western desert. And in fact, it became clear that China was now the fastest growing nuclear power on the planet, that they were building over 100 new nuclear warheads every year. So you couple this also with the state of the U.S. arsenal. It should be remembered that the United States has not built a new nuclear warhead since 1989. And some were built in the 70s, and I think even a few were built in the late 1960s. And at the same time, our missile force was really, really old. The Minuteman III, which is our intercontinental ballistic missile that's out in the silos in the American plains, those are supposed to be retired when Ronald Reagan was president. We've been doing life extensions on them forever. But they're old. They're 50 years old at this point, and they simply have to be replaced. The B-2 bomber and the B-52 bombers are going to be replaced with a nuclear mission by the B-21 Raider. The Ohio-class ballistic missile submarines have to be replaced with a new Columbia program. And all the warheads have to be replaced. Because as I said, the newest warhead is 35 years old. Many of them are decades older. And it simply is an issue of we're coasting on an arsenal that was built in the Cold War. And we have to build a new arsenal for the next half century. But the problem is that we're not building new warheads. We haven't built a new warhead since 1989, as noted. And the 2010 Nuclear Modernization Program, which was basically the congressional effort that was supported by President Obama to build a new arsenal, is not going well. The Department of Energy has yet to build a new nuclear warhead, despite the fact that we're now in year 14 of the 2010 Nuclear Modernization Program. And when you compare that with China, which is, as noted earlier, building 100 nuclear weapons per year, a lot of people in the nuclear policy community said, oh my God, Russia's engaging in nuclear coercion. Russia has 2,000 more non-strategic nuclear weapons than we do. China's building 100 new nuclear weapons per year. We, despite our best efforts, are failing to actually produce new nuclear warheads. Something has to change. The state of our deterrent is bad. The adversaries are building new nuclear weapons, and they're engaging in nuclear coercion. So then in April 2023, a bipartisan study group out of Lawrence Livermore that was staffed by members from the Obama, Trump, and Bush administrations and four-star generals and academics put together a study that called for new steps to strengthen the U.S. arsenal and potentially expand the state of the U.S. arsenal, build more weapons. And then in October 2023, the congressionally mandated Strategic Posture Commission, which was made up of officials of former Bush, Obama, Trump, and Biden administration officials, and former senator and former vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and all got together and wrote a report. And one of the commissioners served as the chief U.S. negotiator for President Obama's New START Arms Control Treaty, and she served as the Undersecretary of State for Arms Control. And she really was an arms controller par excellence. Her bona fides were impeccable. So it was surprising when this group of Democrats and Republicans, including some arms controllers in good standing, said that the current nuclear modernization program of record is necessary but insufficient, and that we need to be prepared for a world without limits on the numbers of nuclear weapons, and that we need to be prepared to upload nuclear warheads onto existing ICBMs, reopen shuttered ballistic missile tubes on the U.S. submarine force, increase the number of nuclear-armed cruise missiles. We need to be prepared for a world in which actors have no limits on the size of their nuclear arsenals. And so what you saw by the fall of 2023 was this new nuclear consensus really coalesce and say, it's time to rebuild the arsenal, It's time that we are building the capabilities we need to deter China and Russia. That's not to say we need an arsenal that's as big as Russia and China combined, but we do need to reevaluate what is our nuclear strategy and what is the size, composition, and diversity of our nuclear force. Now, that's the new American nuclear consensus, and it's basically a merger of the nuclear realists and some of the nuclear arms controllers. Who are those outside those consensus? It's the nuclear disarmament crowd. It's those folks who continue to advocate for U.S. nuclear reductions and disarmament. And I would offer that they'll find themselves increasingly irrelevant to the nuclear policy debates within the national security community. And in fact, you even see some people who are advocating for a change in the U.S. targeting schema from counterforce strategy to a de facto strategy of countervalue targeting, that is, targeting large population centers such as cities. And I would offer that those folks will increasingly be viewed as extremists. And I'll just point out that, you know, for those outside the mainstream, their goal is not necessarily a world where there are no nuclear wars. They would certainly welcome such a world, as would I. But instead, their goal is a world without nuclear weapons. Nuclear abolition is the focus of their analysis, not strategic stability. And in a world where the authoritarians are expanding their nuclear arsenals and engaging in nuclear coercion and invading their neighbors, calling for nuclear abolition among the Western democracies will become not only irrelevant to national security policymakers, but alienating to them. And so what I'd say is, you know, the new mainstream is there. They are advocating for a reinvigorated nuclear enterprise that's agile and responsive and able to meet emerging deterrence challenges. They recognize that nuclear arms control treaties that reduce arsenal sizes may not return for many years. And then you've got the other group that says that U.S. nuclear reductions are the answer no matter the question. And they give little thought, you know, for trivialities like U.S. extended deterrence to our allies, damage limitation should deterrence fail, or hedging against an uncertain strategic future. And so, you know, what I'd say is that, you know, Congress and executives and government agencies should recognize that those in the nuclear disarmament community have no counterparts in Beijing or Moscow. Their arguments, to the extent that they escape their self-contained echo chambers, are aimed solely at weakening the United States. And our adversaries should recognize that this emerging consensus in Washington is not to shrink before growing Chinese and Russian threats, but to meet those threats through an increasingly capable nuclear arsenal backed by the industrial capacity to respond to dynamic challenges.
Thank you for listening to NIDS Knowledge. This show is produced under the NIDS Podcasting Network, a division of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. NIDS is a 501c3 organization dependent upon donations to provide this podcast and bring about awareness of the peacekeeping value of U.S. strength and our national deterrence. You can catch all of our podcasts or provide feedback at thinkdeterrence.com. I would like to thank our producer, Kimberly Charrington, our sponsors, and all the fantastic members of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies for making this podcast possible. Stay tuned next week for another exciting and informative NIDS Knowledge.
A production of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies.